Will everyone in the Missouri Senate please rise for the prayer by our chaplain, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance.
In the sixth chapter of Galatians we hear, "As we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men." Heavenly Father, after a long and tiring night, show us where to best express our concerns and kindness that we might make the best use of our time and energies as we gather once again. And may we do what is necessary in this day to complete our work and prepare to go home. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Barnetts, Bartle, Bray, Callahan, Champion, Clemens, Crowell, Cunningham, Days, Dempsey, Engler, Goodman, Green, Griesheimer, Justice, Keviny, Lager, Lemke, Mayor, McKenna, Nadler, Pierce, Ferguson, Ridgway, Roop, Schaefer, Schmidt, Scott, Shields, Schumacher, Stouffer, Vogel, Wilson, Wright Jones.
Senator from the 8th. Senator from Stoddard. A quorum is present. The Senate is in session. Secretary, read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, second regular session, first extra session, seventh day, Tuesday, July 13th, 2010.
Mr. President,
met pursuant to adjournment.
Senator from St. Francois.
Mr. President, I move that further reading of the journal be dispensed with, the same be approved as though having been fully read.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion, it shall prevail. Say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Reading is dispensed with.
Mr. President.
Senator.
Do we have messages from the House?
We do.
Would you have those read?
Read the messages from the House.
Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and adopted the Conference Committee Report on Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1 as amended and is taken up and passed. Conference Committee Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1. Also, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has adopted Senate Committee Substitute as amended for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2 and has taken up and passed Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2 as amended. Respectfully submitted, Daniel Adam Kremlis, Chief Clerk.
Mr. President.
Senator.
For the record, Blake Hansen of KOMU-TV, Kelly McGill of the AP, and Brad Johnson of ABC 17 News have been given permission to photograph. Mr. President.
Senator.
Would you recognize the Senator from Cape Girardeau for a privileged motion?
The Senator from Cape Girardeau.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move the Conference Committee report to Senate Committee Substitute to House Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 1 be brought before the body.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion it shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before the body.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Conference Committee report on Senate Committee Substitute to House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1 be adopted. Mr. President, if I could explain to the body, the Conference Committee report to Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute to House Bill 1 is the Senate version that has passed this chamber five times now of the benefit reforms to our state worker pension systems, minus the investment board language. You all have received a copy of the conference committee report last night. We have also supplied from Rhonda and the Joint Committee on Public Employee Retirement a summary for the CCS, or the CCR that's out there. It will have a summary of the proposed changes. It also has the cost run sheets for 10 years that you can look at be able to look at each individual system, as well as a total estimated cost savings that is associated with this package. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Otherwise, I renew my motion.
Does any senator wish to be heard? Senator from 13th.
To inquire the senator from Cape
Does
Girardeau.
The senator from Cape yield?
I yield.
Proceed.
One more time. Your reforms are my reductions. Just to reiterate the one point, in trying times, trying things have to happen. In the 90s, when the state was flush with money, you've seen a lot of pension bills passed throughout the legislature that increased benefit to state employees. Now, with the revenues very drastically low coming into the state, reductions have to be made to deal with balancing the budget, and that's the only responsible thing to do. So I know you have worked hard on it, and I am not saying this to be facetious, but when everyone has said reforms, I just want to reiterate the point I did last week. You and I are both trustees that Mosier's is one of the top five nationally recognized public pension systems, and they operate very efficiently. So when it says reforms, I don't want to put us in the category of Illinois and California in that way when we say it. So I just like to use the word reduction. That's all I have to say.
Fair
Thank
enough.
You.
Senator from St. Francis.
Require the senator from Cape.
Senator from Cape, you yield?
I yield.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, I want to say I appreciate your work on this. I know we don't always get along on everything, but as I told people when I was defending your positions, that no one's put more time in a particular subject than you had. But, you know, I have the second most state workers in any Senate district. The senator from Cole has the most. And I've been taking hits because the fact that I was advocating looking at their sick days and making them personal days and taking two of their holidays this year and changing their pension. And I just wanted to point out to you, I don't know, did you see last week's Wall Street Journal, July 10th? It had a featured article on state shift to hybrid pensions.
Yeah.
And it had a whole
I'm
list.
I'm familiar with that, yeah.
What's that?
I'm familiar with that.
Well, we've got a whole list of states, mainly defined contribution, going all the way to defined
right.
contribution
right.
plans to these states with their current workers. And what I want to establish here, the 58,000 workers are not affected by this change. They are grandfathered in, if you will. We have a system that if this financial, if we don't do this, it's my belief that we are going to have to go for this current state workers' pension plan. Do you think anything will have to be adjusted if we didn't do
well,
this or we don't do this measure?
Senator, here's the way I look at it. Just, you know, to kind of explain where we're at. We heard a lot last night about proposals that had been brought forward. One that was discussed a lot was tax credit reform. Now, notwithstanding anyone else, I take a back seat to no one on advocating and putting forward concrete ideas and legislation to get us to tax credit reform. But I've also done that in health care. I've also done that in pensions. I've also done that in shoring up some of our debt financing. And I've done that consistently since I showed up in the Missouri Senate with a global strategy of how we go through this simple reality and process, Senator. And that is the reality that everyone sees that government is going to have to right-size to its revenues
in some way or somehow. And a great quote, reality is not negotiable.
Correct.
And the reality is we cannot financially afford the current system if we are going to go forward in a financially prudent way.
Well, I agree with the sentiment of that statement, but I would say it this way. We can afford this pension system if we want to gut education, if
choices.
We want to do other things. What
fire employees.
This, yeah.
That's why I tell my employees, right. If we don't do anything, we're going after your pension. We're going to have to judge. Because my private, I do dozens of pension plans. And over the past 10, 15 years, almost every individual employer has changed their pension plans. A lot of them, unfortunately, on their current workers, but almost all of them on their new hires to be able to, so that they don't have to take benefits from their current employees. The same thing holds true from us. Same way with the holidays. If we don't do something, we will have to make those choices and take money from education or fire more employees. 200 something in the case of the two state highway.
Yeah.
Reality, you know, is
not negotiable. Reality is not negotiable. And what this legislation does over the next 10 years is it allows the General Assembly to realize over $600 million in savings in this particular area as opposed to some other area. Now, does that settle the structural imbalance that we have in state government?
Absolutely
it doesn't
not.
Even come close, Senator.
But
it does not even come close to the $1.2 billion hole that we're staring at in next year's budget.
We can't be like the federal government, though, and say, well, you know what, we really can't cut back on this or that, because, you know, in reality, we're trillions under this, so it really doesn't matter.
And the fact of the matter is, you can't even raise taxes to fix that hole, okay? And so for those that want to advocate, well, the way you do this is you just raise taxes. You know, that's fine, but you can't raise taxes enough to fix that structural imbalance.
Well, I don't want to make
it's not even going to happen on that side. So
I'm just saying I wanted to frame this that we're not doing this to penalize the workers. We're doing it so that we don't have to get in and make some major radical shifts.
No.
And I want to make one other point, though, and that's with the teachers. The teachers, you know, we've heard from their lying director that they're going to be part of this. It's not the case. And I said lying. Their source of their funds, what we're concerned with, the general revenue, the teacher participates, as my kids do that are teachers, and the school districts. Now, I tell them, you're not going to be actuarially going to be able to go along at this pace. What you're going to have to do is you're going to have to end up raising your part, and then the school district's going to have, and in 10 years, you're going to be somewhere between 22 and 25% each side. Then two things are going to happen. The new teachers aren't going to be able to afford to exist putting 22 to 25% of their money into their pension plan to be able to take care of some of the ones that are out in 3 years and retired at 51, went to a superintendent, went to a different school district. And now I would use the system too, but we've got the system set up where it's not financially viable long term. That's a different matter because the money comes from a different source. It doesn't do us any good to put the teacher's pension in. The other thing that's going to happen is at some point the school district's patrons are going to say, what do you mean we can't hire any more teachers because we have to put 25% in the pension? What do you mean we have to raise the size of the classrooms to more people because we have to put this big percentage and a bigger percentage every year into the pension? At some point, the patrons are going to go, wait a second, what are we spending money on? That's a different argument. You can have that for a
but
different
it's,
day, but
it's actually an argument, you know, and I think your office was told this by that executive director that, oh, yeah, we know our pension system is in trouble and we want to work with you next year to reduce benefits to our workers. And I'm being told that they want to come to the General Assembly next year and actually put forth a package as it relates to teachers that does reduce benefits.
Well, every time
they're up here,
they've got requests and nobody wants to tell them no.
Yeah.
We want to go from 5 years to 3 years.
Yeah.
We want to, and nobody wants to tell them no.
The fact that now they've got
their pension where they're going to have to raise the rate. It's like the federal government. They've got the printing press. Well, the teachers' retirement system has got this source of income. They've got the teachers and the school boards that they keep jacking up the rates.
Yeah.
We've doubled in the last 10 years, and we're going to double again in the next 10 years. And the point is that has nothing to do with this pension because this comes from a different source,
right.
And that's what we're trying to protect and make sure that we don't have to make those tough choices and withhold money from education
And I appreciate your inquiry, but I think it's important to make this point, and I wanted to make this when we started. For all the talk that's happened on the benefit reduction side and on the investment board side, something that I think is very, very important to understand is when you're a fiscal conservative like me, philosophically, I'm going to win. All right? Government will right size to revenues. You want to know why? Because the founders of this state put in the state constitution, and the citizens of this state put in our constitution the fact that we can't deficit spend, that we have to have a balanced budget. And as painful as it has been for Democratic governors, Republican governors, and now a Democratic governor to balance the imbalanced budgets that we've passed out of the General Assembly in recent years, the fact of the matter is that has to be done constitutionally. What this version of pension reform does is it, as we stare at a $1.2 billion deficit, says this is one little area over the next 10 years where we're going to realize a little bit of the savings. But by no means does it stop the hard work that's ahead. And what's most disappointing to me personally about this bill is the loss of the investment board. Because the investment board over 10 years was actually new money. It was found money out of the market. Now people can say, well, you can't project that that's what was going to be saved and here or there. And I will concede, I can't predict the future. No one can predict the future. But I would point to this fact. Why did the Miami Heat offer LeBron James all that money just recently? They have no idea if LeBron James is going to even be able to make a layup next basketball season. You can't predict the future. Who has any idea if he's even going to remember when he wakes up tomorrow how to dribble a basketball? What do? The marketplace, every rational human being in the world, looks at past performance to predict future results. It happens in every capacity of life, every day of life. Everyone that wants to advocate for tax increases, how do you think they get and generate the estimates of what new revenue is going to come in if you raise taxes? You look at all of the people that used to be in the state and you say, well, if they stay in the state and they pay this, then we expect to get this. You look at past performance to predict future
results.
Senator,
I know that there's
and that would have been new money, $400 million.
Yeah.
There is no new money in this to help balance. No new revenue to help balance this budget. But it is an ability to say, as it relates to the reality of the cuts that are coming to state government. And make no mistake about it, they're coming. I said it last year, and many people said it when we were debating our budget. This is the easy budget year. As hard as everyone thought it was, this is the easy year. And if we don't start looking at all of these options, you know, I don't know what this state's going to do.
Well, Senator, before that, there are other people get up and start talking about negotiating reality. We are
negotiating what?
Reality.
Oh. Yeah.
Two things. One, we talk about this the first 10-year savings when we would be long forgotten. The next 10 years is much, much higher because of the fact of the people furthering.
It's a geometric formula, not an algebraic.
Right. That's it. And the other thing is I heard is, well, if we're going to cut back on new hires and we're not going to expand, how are we going to have any savings? Well, you're probably going to talk about that, but in my area, in the mental health, the prison, the officers, we have a big turnover, so even though we might have a freeze on increasing numbers, we have new people coming into the system all the time, and that's how a lot of the savings will start initially.
Right. That was an issue that was brought up with the senator from the 13th and I at one point in the debate, and I distributed to the members an analysis of what has happened this year. Although we have not increased the aggregate total of state workers, we have hired 5,700 new state workers this year. Because in an employer with 57,000 state workers, we have at any given month 150 employees that are retiring. We have another 100 employees that are just transitioning out of employment in any given time period. So there are new hires that are being calculated in this, even though we do not increase the aggregate number of state workers.
Well, Senator, I'm happy that we're not like New Jersey, Colorado, Utah, and a number of states that are currently changing their current employees' pension plan and changing it in the middle of the game. We're hopefully doing something more responsible, and I appreciate your work on it.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on a motion from the senator from Cape? Senator from Monroe, for what reason do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President, to speak on the Conference Committee report.
Proceed.
We've been hearing some discussion this morning about reality being non-negotiable, and I think we look at what we're going to ask new state hires to contribute back to the state for the opportunity to retire within the state with a defined benefit plan. I'll go back to the senator from the 27th during this last session, and I think I want every state worker to understand that these things should never be called cuts again until we face reality. What is happening today and what is happening every time a new cut is happening is we're creating a new victim. Today's victim is every new state hire that we make. The senator from the 27th last year asked a poignant question. Whenever the question was asked about streamlined sales tax initiative on taxes that are owed by people who purchase over the internet in the state of Missouri. Are they paying the tax this year? No, was his answer. Will they pay the tax next year? Yes. And remember, reality is, those are taxes that are owed. Not a new tax, taxes that are owed. Reality is that there are a lot, believe it or not, there is an internet out there. Sales over the internet are growing. Are the new hires that we hire in the state paying 4% of their salary back to the state this year? The answer is no. Will they next year? The answer is yes. It's a new tax on every state worker. Reality is the world is changing. We have went on this mantra of no new taxes, no matter what. And that mantra is creating these victims we're looking at today. Let's take another example I brought up. Cell phones. E911 services. We're still thinking we ought to go after Alexander Graham Bell and tax him to supply E911 services throughout this state. Fairness demands that this body get off of this mantra of no new taxes, no matter what. We are creating a very discriminatory position and more victims because we will not look at this. The last day of school in Scottsdale County, I spoke to sixth graders. 48 sixth graders. 41 of those, or 42, excuse me, of those sixth graders had a cell phone. I hardly know anyone under the age of 30 who has a landline within their house. We're shifting all the burden on these services and the taxes to our seniors and to many of those people who can least afford to fund these type of things throughout the state. But no new taxes, no matter what. Let's create some more victims here. Today's latest victims, every new state hire. Last month's victim was every rural school district in the state because $70 million got cut from transportation funding because we didn't have the revenue. Take a look at my district when a victim like that occurs. It doesn't mean that when that funding is cut for transportation in Putnam County, which has the largest transportation routes within the state, is going to stop hauling that their kids. It means they're going to haul them. They're going to go back to the school board. They're going to say, guess what? We're going to create a fourth grade victim here. We're going to create a second grade victim because we're going to cut them teachers out because we have to transport those kids. We're going to cut a program out. New victims. It reminds me of the farmer who thought he could cut his way out of his rough times. Had a rough year this year. Lost some money. Fertilizer went up. I'm going to cut my way out of this. I'm going to cut my fertilizer out. You compound the problem. And with the decreasing revenue of our discretionary revenue from the state, we stop in many programs drawing down $2-3 of federal money to match those dollars. Because we don't have the revenue to even sustain those minimal programs. No new taxes, no matter what. Reality is, our state workers are the people who do the services and provide the frontline services to the people of this state. Treat your people right, and they will treat you right. So I think what I'm trying to say is, I'm not willing to create a new victim here today on this piece of legislation. This is the wrong victim. This is the wrong message. I think it's time that reality demands that we are in the 21st century, and we're going to be looking at our roads here in a couple years. We can go back to the 19th and have roads that work for the Pony Express. We can say that we'll stay in the 19th century and Alexander Graham Bell can finance everything and we're not going to look at a cell phone and look at fairness. We can say that there's not an internet out here and we shouldn't do some fairness on collections to be fair to our Main Street. We can stay in the past. Reality is upon us. The reality is we cannot simply cut our way out of these problems. Things change. We could We just need to have a balanced approach to state government. The new victim today is our state workers. And I hope the state workers are listening today. Well, not the ones that are off work. Anyway, the rest of them ought to be working. But I hope they understand that those who vote no and look at this are standing up for the future of the state of Missouri. We have to cut this program because it's not sustainable. Well, let me tell you something. The coffee out there in that coffee machine and the nice things when we walk in there, everything that we make an appropriation for is a subsidization. It doesn't matter what it is. Now, you can say your state workers are worth it, or you can say that coffee out there and that coffee machine is worth it. It doesn't matter. You'll find the values of this legislature in where we put our dollars, in where we put those resources that we have. I am not willing at this time to go about creating the revenue for the rest of a deal off the backs of my state workers. Would I concede and will I say publicly, will we have to do something about retirement age? I think so. I think reality is people are living longer. People are working longer. There may be some things, but this is a radical reform that sends a terrible message to future workers within this state. And I just hope this body, in this coming times, whenever we think about where we're at, will take a balanced approach. I think it's funny, and I might, that when I spoke to a group of probably 400 Democrats, the very first person I walked out and quoted in front of those 400 Democrats was John Ashcroft. And John Ashcroft called a special session in 1989 because we had $150 million. Somebody wrote that. I don't know whose article that was. It was a great article. Talked about how far this state has come and not being rational in approaching reality and how we have solved problems in this state. John Ashcroft realized he had a Democratic House and Senate he had to work with. He realized that this state had made a commitment to whether it be state workers, to whether it be those fourth graders, to whether it be those in mental health, to whether it be those seniors who lost home-delivered meals this year, to whoever these new victims are, it's not cuts. Every cut now is a new victim. He said it very clearly. We need to increase revenue. No, I think he said, I think, quote John Ashcroft here, as best I can recall, I don't have it in front of me, we need to increase taxes so we can live up to our commitments and not make victims. Boy, that would take a lot of courage today. I used the example this week. We had a wonderful groundbreaking in Northeast Missouri, ribbon cutting, this past week, through the heart of my district, Highway 36. Soon will be four lane from Indianapolis, Indiana to Colorado. We had a 52-mile stretch, most of which was in my district. That was two lane. It was the bottleneck of the nation. The people of Northeast Missouri of five counties put it before themselves and voted on themselves a half-cent sales tax to help fund their third of this road. The people of Macon, Shelby, Marion, Monroe counties paid more for that road than anybody else in the United States of America. The people of Northeast Missouri understood and are willing in my district to lead by example. Lead by example, they will. They understood that that we could not just continue to exist the way we've been existing. That if we were going to prosper, if we were going to have safety for our children, if we were going to have economic development like we needed, we must invest ourselves. The people of Adair and Macon County did that on Highway 63, four lanes to Kirksville, taxed themselves because the people of Northeast Missouri get it. I'm sure that there'll be people who are jumping up and down because somebody's got the courage to talk about revenue enhancements in an election year. Well, I'll tell you what I believe. I believe the people of this state understand and are smarter than those commercials that'll be run. I believe they want people who will talk straight at them. They want people who will be willing to say what needs to be said. And they want somebody who will lead the way out to jobs and prosperity and services that the people of the state deserve. I'm following the example of the people of Northeast Missouri and what they taught me through Highway 36 and 63. We want prosperity. We want economic development. We want a safe place for our families to travel. we invested in Missouri. We invested in ourselves. They didn't hang on to that mantra of no new taxes, no matter what. They saw the reality, and it was non-negotiable. It was non-negotiable. I hope, and I will no longer say it's cuts. No more will I say when another withhold comes by, it's another cut. It's not another cut. It's another new victim. Another new victim is made today if you vote for this. I'd urge this body to say no to creating a new victim out of our one of our most precious resources that we have within the state, our state worker.
Senator from Cape Girardeau, what reason do you rise?
To inquire the senator from Monroe.
Senator from Monroe, yield?
I yield.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you very much for your talk. What's your plan?
You know, spoke, Senator, what did I just say?
No, hold on. You spoke in generalities.
Yes, sir.
Okay. How much taxes do you want to raise, and who do you want to raise them on?
Now, Senator, I didn't say, and you know, you had this debate last year with the senator from Jasper.
No, that was actually this year.
Well,
it was during session.
Okay, yeah.
Years change in January.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay.
Days change at midnight. Well, I think, one, you know, I think I mentioned very clearly, there's taxes that are owed over the internet sales.
Tax the internet. Okay, that's $185 million. Okay, what do you do? You need to get $1.2 billion.
Well,
that's $185 million.
You know what? What's that's $185 million further than you are.
No, it's not.
Well,
raising taxes?
No, collecting taxes that are owed, Senator.
No.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
They're not owed. Because you would reduce the amount that you say is owed. And you would pay a higher fee to this new voluntary entity than you do in the 2% withhold right now. There's no vendor that would sign on for 2%. They don't exist. You don't have the contracts. They don't exist. So you're at $185 million of new taxes on your constituents.
No, I'm not at $185 million of new taxes.
Okay.
No, I'm not at $185 million in new taxes.
Okay. So who do you want to raise taxes on? Where do you want to get your revenue?
Well, Senator, I think I also mentioned that I don't know the exact projections, but I think reality is we have cell phones in the state, and we have a lot of them.
Okay.
I think that is one place we could definitely research and approach.
You want to tax them?
Well, Senator, if the fee structure, I think it's called, instead of a tax on phones, is how we do with E911 services, I think there needs to be a melding from landlines, which, Senator, are landlines increasing, or are we trying to, in this reality, are we trying to collect as many dollars off of the landlines that are existing?
None of that money goes into general revenue.
Right, it's for E911
services. You're talking about, I want to know your plan, all right? This is the big leagues. You're in the Missouri Senate, Senator,
right.
All right? This is where rhetoric meets reality. What's your plan? Go.
Well, I'll tell you what's not my plan.
That's the easy part, Senator. It's real easy to say no. You want to sit up here and
Senator, pontificate?
Lead.
All right.
Lead. America is watching. Lead. What's your plan?
Senator, we have $185 million with the internet sales collection that are owed per year. How much is your plan taking saving per year here?
Per year?
Yeah.
In this particular aspect?
Yeah.
Over 10 years,
it'll be
$600 million if you
want to
look at.
Okay, so over 10 years, that's $1.8 billion.
Okay.
So we're $600 million and $1.8 billion that this would be collecting. I think that at some point, Missouri has to look at the reality of where we're at in the world. I haven't laid anything out there, but we are now the lowest in the nation on tobacco tax.
Okay. Where should it be?
Senator, I don't know. I know this, though. We could double it and still be the lowest in the nation.
So you're advocating...
And that's about 95. That would be about 95...
So you're advocating tobacco tax increase.
That's something we can look at. That's 95.
Okay. Let's get here.
Yeah.
Let's get in the real world.
You're advocating
a tax increase on tobacco.
I think we can look at that.
Does that have to go to a vote of the people?
It depends on if we go over the Hancock amount. I would be happy to send it before the people.
Okay.
I would advocate that to go before the people, and then it be laid very clearly out where those dollars are spent, whether it be health care or where. You know, we've tried that before. Actually, I opposed that. I think Governor Holden was the last governor that tried that, wasn't it?
No. It was a hospital association through an initiative petition.
Okay.
Well, twice it was defeated.
Twice. Yeah, that's the second go-around it was.
Well, and then the one before that was a transportation tax increase.
Well, when did Holden, when did Governor, didn't Governor Holden have, didn't we run it under Governor Holden there?
It was an initiative petition when he was governor, but Governor Holden didn't have anything to do with it.
Well, okay, but it was under his administration. The Right to Life folks had some problems with that, and I think there was a lot of things that came along that time period. And we were, at that point in time, at a different time. That was, 2002? Was it about 2002?
You advocate, I mean, should it be initiative petition, or should you vote on a tax increase here that goes to a vote of the people?
Well, I would advocate that we could, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So you would vote for a tobacco tax. For a fee increase on cell phones. You want to vote for a collect you say your words. On the internet. What are your words on this new money that's coming out of the internet? How do you phrase it?
Senator, it's taxes that are owed.
Taxes that are owed.
Yeah, it's taxes that are owed. And it also puts our Main Street business.
If they're owed, why don't the Department of Revenue
senators like you stand up and say, I will not let this legislation pass enabling legislation to collect those.
No, listen. Take a breath. If it's already owed.
Well, you asked a question and I was giving you an answer.
If it's already owed, mm-hmm. then and it's not being paid, then there's a law being violated, correct?
Well, there is not a mechanism for the collection of those taxes.
You said it was already owed. You said it's already owed, so if it's already owed, that means somebody is not paying what is already owed.
We're not collecting those taxes that are
okay. Why doesn't the Department of Revenue lock those people up?
Because Senator, there is not a system for those who are making the sale to turn the collections in and to have that, then the person at fault is not at fault because we have not allowed for system to collect.
I don't understand. Explain it to me like I'm a 6-year-old. You said they're owed, but now you're saying it's not the person that owes its fault for not paying it.
Because
it's either owed or it's not owed.
It's owed.
Okay.
If the same sale that you made over the internet, you walk down to your main street and you walked into your store and you walked in there and they made you a sale, they would collect a tax from you. The system is not set up to collect the taxes over the internet. Other states have made a concerted effort to make that system where it can and will happen.
Okay. Is it owed or is it not owed?
Yes, Senator.
Okay.
It is owed.
If it's owed, why don't we go and have the Department of Revenue arrest those people that owe us that money? Wouldn't we do that now if you, I don't know, Senator, did you pay your taxes this year?
Yeah.
Okay. If you hadn't, would you be in trouble? Would you expect to be in trouble? Because you owe that money, right?
Well, if I didn't owe any taxes, I wouldn't expect to be in trouble.
Well, if you owed taxes,
right?
Taxes this year?
Well, I said yeah, and I paid
Okay. And so if you hadn't paid your taxes this year, because you owed them. Well, let me ask you this. Why did you pay them? Why did you pay the taxes?
Why did I pay my taxes? Because they were owed.
Okay. Did you think you were going to get in trouble if you didn't pay them?
Well, I kind of thought that might be part of it.
Part of it. So if these internet
taxes... Do you know a way that you cannot pay them and not get in trouble?
No, I don't.
I thought you might be a good attorney. I didn't know if you had a way
And that makes my point. Because obviously, if I buy something on the internet, you're telling me I owe taxes.
Yeah.
Okay? And I haven't paid those taxes on the internet. So I'm just wondering, why doesn't the Department of Revenue come on this Senate floor and arrest me?
Are you saying that you do owe those taxes and you haven't paid in that,
no.
Senator?
Well, I'm saying you're saying they're owed.
If you make that admission,
no. you're saying there are people who do the right thing. No, you're saying that they're owed.
Well, you're just saying you made a
statement. No, you're saying that the tax on the internet is owed.
Yeah.
And I'm saying if that's the case, then where's the Gestapo?
Yeah. Well, I'm saying there are choices we make on this floor every day. And you want to take and try to move the debate from how is the system going to work intricately within internet sales tax streamline.
I want to know what your plan is. Can we do this, or do we make another victim out of our state workers? Senator.
And I say I think it's worth a chance looking at collection, working hard to pass the legislation that the senator from the 24th has been bringing in front of us so we don't have to make another.
I want to understand. Yeah. Your plan is not to do this legislation.
Not to create
but
victims.
To go get more money.
Not
from the
to
state
create
of Missouri.
More victims. My plan.
You want
not.
More money from Missourians, whether it's on the internet, whether it's on the cell phones, or whether it's the smokers.
Well,
is that a fair characterization of your plan? Those are the three things that we just talked about. Any other plans?
I think that's fair.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the senator from Monroe. Your plan, raise cell phone fees, raise taxes on tobacco, cigarettes, and go put in place a mechanism that allows you to collect taxes on the internet that are not being collected now. You say are owed, but they're not being collected, nor is the Gestapo of the state of Missouri going out and arresting anybody for not paying those internet taxes. Is that a fair characterization of your plan?
And your plan is to make victims out of these state workers today, to make victims out of fourth graders who are getting monies withheld from them. And your plan, because you do not want to do these things, is to make victims out of seniors who are not going to get their home delivered in congregate meals. And the people at mental health who have seen the cuts and the shift to county governments that we're trying to run those costs down because we won't be responsible here.
No, my
that's,
plan.
That's part
my
of your plan,
plan. Senator. All those tax credits that you receive,
yeah,
take those away from you. My plan, all those developers, that guy Jeff Smith, not the one we served with, but the other one, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Him, no more tax credits to him. Now, that's the
what
difference.
Is that all your list of
low-income housing? Absolutely.
No, what about
get rid of historic preservation tax credits, get rid of low-income housing tax credits, cut off the tax credit gravy train that, oh, by the way, what didn't come up yesterday, you got a $2.2 billion unfunded liability of issued tax credits that we don't know how or when they're going to be redeemed. But thank God we've got a governor that has put a stop to it with the only power he's got, which is to not call another meeting of the Missouri Housing Development Commission. Thank God for the governor stepping up and stopping that insanity. All right? So there are things in other plans that are moving forward.
Right, Senator, and there are things in other plans and addressing
you want to say, I didn't make the withholds to K-12 education, Senator.
No,
I didn't make those.
No, you didn't have to. You just over-appropriated. You're not appropriating.
No.
So you didn't even make the over-appropriation.
I didn't vote for this budget because you fought me on my plans in which to fix all of that. All right? And I've had them. I've had them from buying down the debt. I've had them from
So
I want to understand you.
Yeah.
Your solution as the senator from Monroe representing the constituents in northeast Missouri.
Yeah.
Get more revenue from them. Because by golly, the victims are not the taxpayers back home, but everybody that's dependent on state government on one of their handouts, whether it's the big developer, whether it's the farmer, whether it's the state worker, or anyone else. That's the priority, not the poor family members that are just struggling getting up, that don't have a defined benefit plan, that don't give a governmental handout, that don't get anything, that work 16-hour days paying the Gestapo of the state of Missouri. So you stand with the receivers, and I stand with the payers. And, Senator, once you sign the front of a paycheck, instead of just endorsing the back of it, maybe you'll join me in that call.
You know, Senator,
thank you,
I have
Mr.
signed
President.
The front of a paycheck.
Does any other senator desire to be heard from the motion from the senator from Cape? Senator from the 24th, for what reason do you rise?
Mr. President, I would like to speak against the bill.
Proceed.
I want to echo some of the same sentiments of the senator from Monroe. I think that the state of Missouri needs to know that he's not alone in his concern about all the citizens of Missouri. I mean, this General Assembly refuses to even consider updating the antiquated, unfair income tax system we have. It refuses to collect the taxes due us, as the Senator from Monroe discussed. It refuses to even look at the 130 sales tax exemptions to special interest groups that came to the Capitol with big paid lobbyists and got their way, their deal on sales tax exemptions. It refuses to tax tobacco and alcohol at a level that any sane person would think would be reasonable, to pay for the harmful effects that they cause on individuals in our society. If we were to raise our tobacco tax to the average of all the other states in the country, we would see $650 million a year more. Now, that's a pretty good chunk toward that $1.2 billion deficit, half of it. But yet, this body has not had the guts to talk to the people of Missouri about the rationality of that. All this General Assembly can seem to come up with, the limitations of the imagination, are to tax new hires. Let's tax those folks, despite our desperate need to provide basic safety net services for all Missourians who need them. This proposal simply taxes people who are going to come to work for this state, most of them at $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year. Let's tax them. This General Assembly has no more imagination than that. That's what a disservice to Missourians. What a lack of leadership that we're showing. We've got to do better. We have to do better on behalf of our neighbors, our friends. Missouri's one of the few states that absolutely refuses to say we have to increase revenue to do better. And amazing states, conservative states, even more conservative than Missouri, are recognizing you got to have revenue to provide services, and we're not even providing those basic services anymore. I mean, I'm sad. I'm embarrassed. To have such a spineless reaction to the problems of this state. We need to become leaders. We need to be leaders and explain to the Missourians what shape we're in. Everybody goes back to several years ago when these taxes were voted down. Well, I probably voted against them myself because they were poor proposals and they were self-interest proposals and they were proposals that didn't meet the needs of Missourians. I think, from what I'm hearing in my district, Missourians are to the point of they don't want to be victims anymore that the senator from Monroe talks about. They understand that we're in a different place. And when you're starting to cut access to getting to school, when you're cutting access to higher education, when you are cutting emergency services for people with mental disorders, then Missourians in a pretty sad state. Let's talk to our neighbors about that. Let's explain to them what the needs are and give them a choice now that they're hurting, that their neighbors are hurting. Maybe they would see the reasonableness in raising the tax on cigarettes, in raising a tax on alcohol, in straightening out the income tax system, in collecting taxes that are due. Let's talk to Missourians like they're adults, like they expect to be respected. Just stand here and say, oh, a few years ago, they didn't want that. Well, Missourians are hurting now, and they're going to be hurting more and more every year. And to do these things that save money over time, yeah, that's great. But let's do something that affects them now. A new tax on tobacco brings money in now, not years down when things kind of shake themselves out. Going back to some of our discussions of last night, Why would any company want to relocate to a state like Missouri, much less, you know, stay here if they can go someplace else, if we refuse to provide education at a level that's helpful to the businesses, helpful to people having a productive life, while we refuse to provide enough money for access to health care, we refuse to provide enough money for a decent transportation system that provides mobility at all? Why would any company want to come here, much less stay here, if they can go someplace else? You know, it's not all about low taxes. When you look at the surveys on what businesses choose about a state, low taxes are way down the list. They want to know that states are raising adequate revenue to invest in the state and the people of that state to make it a nice place to relocate a business and to have their workers live. I'm really disappointed that the short-sightedness, the lack of imagination of this General Assembly, all we can come up with is this bill to tax future low-paid employees. What a sad state. I think we ought to go back to the drawing board and let's have a real conversation. Let's lead a real conversation with Missourians about how we're going to get out of this hole in a way that actually would have an impact and bring everybody up to a higher level of living. So I urge a no vote on this bill, and let's rethink this. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from the First, for what reason do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President, to speak in favor of the bill.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. But one great thing about our republic and the idea that our constituents elect and send their leaders to this body is to see the differences in our philosophies, our ideologies, the way that we address and attack the concerns and the challenges of our great state. And you know, just in the few minutes of listening to the debate between the different senators that have voiced their concerns on behalf of their constituents, you see the difference. I mean, you see distinct differences. On one side, you have senators that talk about giving the people a government they can afford, and on the other side, you have senators talking about raising taxes and generating more revenue for an ever-expanding government. But quite frankly, I think that it's time, Mr. President, for me to go back to our Constitution and maybe read that job description again for us, for the senators in this body. It's right here in Article 1, Section 2. It says that all constitutional government is intended for to promote the general welfare of the people, that all persons have a natural right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And this is my favorite line. It's become my favorite line in our Constitution. And to protect. I can't even read it. It's my favorite line. It's to protect the gain of their own industry. I think that's the best line probably in our Constitution, that it's our job as elected representatives of the people to come down here and protect the gain of the people's own industry. When they go to work to support themselves and their families, that one of our chief goals is to protect that. Okay, so they can keep what they earn. All right? Now, does that mean that we don't pay our taxes? Of course not. We have to have taxes to address the basic needs of state government. But quite frankly, when you get into rough times, when you get into crisis like we're facing as a state and a nation, it's incumbent upon us to do things like I believe the governor has encouraged us to do, the leaders of this body, to look at ways, what's the term, systemic change to the way we do business as a state government. And this bill, I think, is one of the only opportunities, again, that we've had to do that as a body. And we've got to start somewhere. This is a change, and I think very carefully,
The senator from Cape has tried to do it so that it does not affect our current employees of the state. But as we look forward, if we are going to be good stewards of what is the people's, then we've got to make changes. Other states are doing it. It's happening in industry, the private industry. And it came up in debate the other day. I mean, I keep hearing that our employees are the lowest or near the bottom. Quite frankly, they're right in the middle. They're 26th. Okay? Could we do better? Well, I think that we would do better by our employees when times are better. But you know what? People are hurting out there. And it's our responsibility to find savings. It's our responsibility to do a better job on behalf of the taxpayers. Okay? And as far as I'm concerned, this is just a start. This isn't where it ends. We got a long way to go. We better roll up our sleeves and get ready to come back here in December and start meeting in committees and start digging through some of these haystacks and finding the needles. Because, again, I don't think we gave the senator from Stoddard the help that he needed in this last budget. We didn't come together and work in all areas that we needed to do. And I think that, we better get serious about this. You know, I'm very proud of the state of Missouri and our General Assembly that I believe that we have been good stewards of the people. But it's easy to govern when you're flush with cash, okay? It's a little bit more difficult when things are tight. So things are tight. So we better put in a little overtime. And you know what? That's what we're doing right here. I think the governor has called us back. I think that he has linked a couple of bills together. I didn't like that bill that we passed this morning. But you know what? You know, you don't always get perfection. You don't always get the whole loaf. This is about moving the ball down the field. And I think it's important for the taxpayers of this state for us to start doing some things that make a difference. And this is a bill that makes a difference. Not just for the next 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years down the road. We better start thinking globally as we look at this. And we better be committed, Mr. President, to come back here in January and look at our tax structure. You know what? The senator from the 24th, she may be right. Maybe we do need to look at our tax structure, and if it is antiquated, we need to look at it and be honest with ourselves and say, what kind of changes do we have to make? But I can tell you this. I certainly would be much more receptive to that and the idea of us looking at our tax structure in the state. If those thieves in Washington, D.C. weren't taking 40% of what my constituents make and make it so hard for them to balance their books at the end of the month until they start downsizing in Washington, D.C., I give the commitment to the people of the first senatorial and the people of the state of Missouri, there will not be a tax increase in the state of Missouri. There will not be. Until the federal government gets its house in order. And Missouri will not be the last state to demand that. The states are going to start rising up, and they're going to say to the federal government, live within your means and quit putting this burden on our people and on generations to come. Go back to the Constitution, go back to Article 1, Section 8, and see what your enumerated powers are. See what your role in the people's lives are supposed to be. Not until, Mr. President, they get their house in order. As long as I'm standing on this Senate floor, there will be no new tax increases. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on a motion from the senator from Cape? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
I close.
Senator from Cape has renewed his motion for the adoption of the conference committee report. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Barnetts, Bartle, Bray, Callahan, Champion, Clemens, Crowell, Cunningham, Days, Dempsey, Engler, Goodman, Green, Griesheimer,
aye,
Justice, Kevany, Lager, Lemke, Mayor, McKenna, Nadler, Pierce, Ferguson, Ridgway, Roop, Schaefer, Schmidt, Scott, Shields, Schumacher, Stouffer, Vogel, Wilson, Wright-Jones.
Senator from Green. Senator from Green votes aye. Senator from Webster. Senator Webster votes aye. Senator from the 7th. Excuse me, 8th. Senator from the 8th votes aye. Sorry about that. Senator from the 11th. Yes. By a vote of 25 ayes and 5 noes, the conference committee report is adopted. Now, Senator from Cape, you're recognized to close on the bill.
No. Mr. President, I move the conference committee report on Senate committee substitute for House committee substitute to House bill number 1 be read a third time and put upon its final passage.
Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
I close.
The Senator of Cape has renewed his motion that Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill number 1 be truly agreed to and finally passed. Madam Secretary, please read the bill and call the roll.
Conference Committee Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill number 1, an act relating to retirement. Senators Barnetts, Bartle, Bray, Callahan, Champion, Clemens, Crowell, Cunningham, Days, Dempsey, Engler, Goodman, Green, Griesheimer, Justice, Kevany, Lager, Lemke, Mayor, McKenna, Nadler, Pierce, Ferguson, Ridgway, Roop, Schaefer, Schmidt, Scott, Shields, Schumacher, Stouffer, Vogel, Wilson, Wright-Jones.
By a vote of 25 ayes and 5 noes, Bill Hegg received a constitutional majority declared passed. If there is no objection, let the journal show that the tiling of perfecting motions were made and that they carried. Senator from St. Francois.
Oh, Custer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Can we go to the order of business of announcements?
Announcements.
Would you recognize me for announcement before Proceed. The farmer senator without his coat leaves? Would you recognize me, sir? Mr. President.
Senator St. Francis.
Thank you. Just briefly, I'll let the President Pro Tem make any thanks. We do appreciate it. I just wanted to let you know for practical purposes, we are going to recess for about 15 minutes so that the bills can be signed. And they said they'd have them ready at 1, so that's why we're going to recess for about 15 minutes. So you guys can take off. There will be no action other than his signature.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from the 34th.
Thank you, Mr. President. To inquire of the Senator from St. Francis.
Senator from St. Francis, you yield?
I yield.
He does proceed.
I just thought maybe we could do this together since neither one of us had a whole lot of sleep, so our thoughts may not be entirely clear. But I wanted to take a moment to thank not only the senators who spent a lot of time. There was a lot of phone calls made in the last 3 or 4 weeks to try to get this put together. The fact is that we did this with a minimal amount of time where the entire body had to be in this chamber trying to make
minimal amount of cost to the taxpayer.
Minimal amount of cost, and that was the goal. But as you well know, there was a lot of phone calls made trying to put this thing together. And it's a case where everybody worked together, and I think we have a result that will save thousands of jobs across the state. Begin the work on pension reform. I can tell you it's not finished here. I mean, this is an evolving process as we go through that. So I think it was a very successful outcome, and I'm very proud to have been a part of that. The main part of all this, though, is we finished. I was reading one of Tony Messenger's deal that said the Senate finished Tuesday, 12 hours after the rest of those in Central Daylight Time finished Tuesday. I thought that was kind of an interesting.
And there's a lot of people that were staying with us besides the senators.
So that's what I wanted to get to is if we could recognize, see if I can go through the list. First, the doorman that I always say that, you know, when we're in these things, I mean, we get up, we go back to our offices, we sit down, we do whatever, sit in our seats. These guys are actually up working and still doing that. So first, let's give some appreciation to those people that serve us so well, the doormen in this chamber.
And Senator, I hope they pass along those thanks to the doormen that are home sleeping right now.
That's right.
The night.
Then there are a whole group of folks that work downstairs, that work in legislative research, that in the computers, that anytime this stuff's going on that nobody ever thinks about because they're down there, and they have to be there. That's part of the deal. So I know some of them are listening on the Internet, and if you don't work directly upstairs on the staffs, we want to show our appreciation to them as well. Certainly, Jim Harrington and his staff, who make sure we had substance to keep us going to that. Jim is, for many of us, Jim is a great friend and colleague. We served with him in the House of Representatives.
I didn't know he did breakfast.
We had breakfast. You were right next to me when he had breakfast.
No, I didn't know that was done. I don't think that we've had him order breakfast before.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're absolutely right. So let's give Jim and his crew a hand. And last, the crew that Ms. Spieler runs, and in rolling and engrossing, they hang with us, the crew up front, and Ms. Spieler, who always obviously is very professional, big part of this body, but stays right with us and feels strongly about her responsibility that if we're on the floor, she's going to be on the floor. So I want to give thanks to her and all of the people that work for her that make sure we get it right.
All right.
Yay! Yay!
And couple, last,
I was going to say, there's
ahead.
A couple, I was going to say, our staffs that were here throughout the night, and especially the legislative research team that are home in bed, because it's a different bill that we were working on this morning that we're here all night. We want to make sure that they know that we appreciate them. So thank you.
Yay.
And this is not really that personal, Senator, but I hope I don't see you for a while. Months.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the rest of it.
I hope I don't see you for months.
Yeah, and one last thank you that I live 3 hours away from this place. You live how far away?
About that.
Okay, but to keep the place going in a special session, you know, we can only be out of session so long. Somebody has to come in to do the technical sessions. So it may seem a little strange when he's in the
short. Was he referred to in one of the emails last night, the king of Coca-Cola, the senator from Coca-Cola?
Senator from Coca-Cola, who gets to come in and preside over an empty chamber with no per diem. So, but, you know, you take that for granted. If he wasn't here and doing that, you know, one of us would have to come in and do that. So that's a big deal.
Well, Senator, one of the things that I found out yesterday and last night is that next session we're going to have to figure out who's going to bring the soda. Because I saw a lot of people go into that room over there looking at the crew and saying, what? No Coke? No Diet Coke? We're going to have to figure that one out, because that's something we talk about. But those of us that mooch off of him and have mooched off of him for years that go in there and take drinks like they're ours, and he supplies that at his expense, his expense, without a per diem for it or reimbursement, that's something that we've just mooched off of him for years. I don't know, maybe nobody else, but I have, and I want to thank him for that besides his work there.
Yay!
Yay!
That's all I got.
Senator from St. Francis.
Mr. President, no further business coming before the body. I move that we stand in recess until 1:05 today.
You've heard the motion of the Senator from St. Francis. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye. All those opposed, the ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. We are in recess.
The hour of recess having expired, the Senate will come to order. Next order of business would be bill signings. All other business will be suspended, and House Bill number 1, having passed both branches of the General Assembly, will be read at length by the Secretary, and if no objections are made, the bill will be signed to the end that it may become law. Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Truly agreed to and finally passed. Conference Committee Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1, an act relating to retirement.
No objections being noted. The bill is so signed. Madam Secretary, read House Bill number 2.
Truly agreed to and finally passed. Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill number 2, an act relating to job growth.
Seeing no objections, the bill will be so signed. No further business coming before the body. The Senate of the first extraordinary session of the second regular session of the 95th General Assembly is adjourned sine die pursuant to the Constitution.